grief. A Charlie Brown Christmas celebrates its 50th anniversary tonight. Who besides me saw the very first one? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a guest pop culture expert about what made A Charlie Brown Christmas stand the test of time. We'll also highlight some of the other popular holiday specials and Christmas movies and invite you to share your favorites. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So do you love this time of year? Do you love all these holiday specials, or are you a Grinch when it comes to this? Let's welcome our guest. Robert Thompson is with us, a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for being with us. We have talked about holiday specials and Christmas movies in the past. But what do you make of this? 2015, marking the 50th anniversary of a Charlie Brown Christmas. Boy, what?
Yeah, and not only 50, is it a half a century old, but whenever it plays on primetime, and let's remember this is the age when people can get these on DVD, they can see them in all kinds of other ways. Kids were watching these on VHS a long time ago. Still, whenever it plays live on primetime, it nearly always beats its time slot, and it nearly always gets really good ratings. What other television show made during the Johnson administration can say that?
You know, and I don't really remember if I watched the very first one or not, but I certainly did. I remember being very young, seeing it for the first time. And what is it, just a bunch of young kids that parents and grandparents are reintroducing this to their kids?
Yes, I think it's had that generational leap. People my age, I would have been 5 when it first played, and we watched it every year, and it became an important part of our holiday ritual. And then when we had kids, of course, we wanted to sit them in front of it and have the same sort of experience. And now, of course, 50 years has gone several generations. We should also say, by the way, that that was an extraordinary period in the mid-60s. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, 1964, still plays on primetime. Charlie Brown Christmas, 1965, still plays on primetime. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, 1966. Frosty the Snowman, 1969. So there was that period of about 6 years or so where we got these classics, one right after the other, that people are still watching today.
That's amazing. All those would have to be like in my top 5, those 4.
Yeah, they would be in mine too. Now part of that shows age, because there are a few others, but they really are the classics. One more thing about Charlie Brown at 50, it was thanks to the Coca-Cola company that this happened. Coca-Cola wanted a Christmas special, and they got hooked up with the Charles Schulz and company, and that's how it happened. There were little Charlie Brown figures holding Coca-Cola signs in the first broadcast, which means Coca-Cola not only brought us Charlie Brown Christmas, one of the greatest television Christmas shows of all time, Coca-Cola was also responsible for kind of the modernized version of Santa Claus that we know today in those famous Haddon Sunbloom illustrations that they did way back in the day. And that's not even to remind us that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was a creation of Montgomery Ward's The Retail and Mail Order Catalog. So people who say, oh, commercialization of Christmas, Christmas and commercialization, right down to the creation of some of our most beloved classics, have been hand in hand for a long time.
I didn't know that, Robert. I can't. Boy, that's that. Learn something new every day. But, you know, I always thought that Charlie Brown Christmas was popular in part because we just love those characters. Like, we probably all seen this special multiple times. And here's a clip, though, of the Charlie Brown gang's reaction to the Christmas tree that that Charlie Brown picked for the Christmas play. Let's take a listen.
What kind of a tree is that?
You are supposed to get a good tree. Can't you even tell a good tree from a poor tree?
I told you he'd goof it up. He's not the kind you can depend on to do anything right.
You're hopeless, Charlie Brown. Completely hopeless.
Rats!
Poor Charlie Brown. I mean, that had
but,
to be.
You know, I think you're right, though. I think the reason we like this is it's all kids, and, you know, there's no adults. And when there are adults, we only hear their voices, and they don't even speak in understandable language.
Yeah, wah, wah, wah.
So there's almost a Lord of the Flies-like character to all of this, although a bit more gentle, but they're really dissing Charlie here. And I think that was part of it, is it still plays 50 years later so contemporary. These kids, if you watch that show, Charlie Brown, I believe he actually uses the word depressed. He could have been a poster child for Prozac long before it was invented. There's therapy. Lucy's selling her therapy. I mean, this show nailed the sort of dark side of childhood in ways that are so contemporary today. And while this one ends with a very redemptive happy ending, let's not get into It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which could have been written by Sartre or Camus.
In fact, I understand that pretty much everyone involved thought that the cartoon was pretty horrible. Why did people have such a negative opinion of it at first?
Well, the animation was very simple, although, you know, when you compare it to things we've seen, you know, the Hanna-Barbera stuff and the Flintstones and whatever, it was by no means, I think, but it was different, and it had actual kids as the voices, as opposed to adults pretending to be kids, and I think that might, believe it or not, have been jarring. And then it's got this really cool jazz music. I think it took a couple of years for us to realize how good this thing was, because its avant-garde quality, I think, was not what some people expected. And also, the story, you know, you're used to seeing cartoons and action 1 minute after another. People are, that's what cartoons could do. And this is not action-packed. I mean, very little. Seinfeld hadn't come up with a show about nothing yet, but mm-hmm. Charlie Brown Christmas comes pretty close. It goes at a snail's pace, which is, I think, one of the things we find so terribly endearing about it today.
Yeah, so it made its debut on CBS on December 9th, 1965, and tonight ABC is going to mark the milestone. What is ABC going to do?
Well, they're going to play a special. I think, I don't know if it's a half hour special or hour special about its 50th anniversary, and then they're going to show the program itself. They tend to take these Charlie Brown specials now and add them to at least an hour time slot by linking them to another show, or in this case, to a special, because they get really high ratings and they want to stretch it out for more than its original airtime.
So do you think Charlie Brown Christmas is ever going to get old, or do you think it has another 50 years in the tank at least?
I really do. I don't see any reason why. I mean, the little kids are going to be watching it this Christmas, and they're going to show it to their little kids. And there is something so timeless about a lot of, I think, Rudolph, too. Rudolph has got that animagic, which is kind of primitive, but it looks like your stuffed animals have come to life. And whatever happens there isn't dated, because so many of these shows were kind of outside of time anyway. So I see no reason to think that a Charlie Brown Christmas is in any way on its decline. And when you think about it, the new television specials that have come out in the last 30 years or so, there are none of them. The Toy Store, the Shrek, all of these kinds of things. Funny enough, but none of them have wheedled their way into the American soul the way this one has.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Robert Thompson, professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, about Christmas specials and Christmas movies. Talking first about A Charlie Brown Christmas, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. There'll be a special tonight. Are you going to be watching? Have you been, is this one of your favorites? Did you used to watch it as a kid, and now do your kids watch it? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Not only talking about A Charlie Brown Christmas, but your other favorite holiday movies or TV specials. Is there there a program that you absolutely must watch each year? Or maybe there's even a least favorite special. Let us know. And let's talk about another Christmas hit that is also celebrating an anniversary this year. Home Alone hit the theaters 25 years ago. And we've got a clip as well here. This is the late John Candy introducing himself to Kevin McAllister's mom in the Scranton airport as she is trying to get back to Chicago where Kevin is home alone.
I had a few hits a few years ago. That's why, just polka, 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 polka. No? Twin Lakes polka, Damavuji polka, a.k.a. Kiss Me polka, polka twist.
Well, these are songs.
Yeah. Yeah, some fairly big hits for us, in the early 70s, Yeah, we sold about 623 copies of that.
In Chicago?
No, Sheboygan. Very big in Sheboygan. They loved it.
Well, we had to play that, of course, because of the shout out to Sheboygan. But what is so special about
shout out to Twin Lakes? I had family in Twin Lakes, okay. Right on the Illinois border, growing up. So all kinds of good Wisconsin shout outs.
There we go. So what made Home Alone so special?
Well, I always, whenever people bring up that Home Alone is a Christmas movie, I have to pause and I think, oh, well, yeah, of course it is. There's all that snow and it happens during Christmas and they're leaving and all the rest of it. But most of Home Alone is, of course, and I think what's so appealing is that kid was, for one thing, so cute, and he was so much an adult, smarter than the rest of us, but he was in this adorable little body. And the fact that, the main body of that whole thing is of him, of course, making fools out of not one but two people trying to penetrate his personal space while he's unattended by any parent or guardian. And it is a hilariously funny movie. Whenever you stumble upon it this time of year, all of a sudden you find that you watch it to the very end. And John Hughes, who wrote the screenplay, he didn't direct that film, but he wrote the screenplay, and he, of course, was the guy that was involved with all those Pretty in Pink and Ferris Bueller and Breakfast Club and all of that. He really knew how to sort of nail the holidays. And, of course, he worked out of Chicago, so he had this sort of Midwestern sensibility. And if Home Alone was his great Christmas movie, at least he wrote the screenplay on it, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I think, was not only the greatest Thanksgiving movie ever made, and certainly John Hughes' best film, but I think remains a real masterpiece of the American cinema.
We are talking with Robert Thompson, professor of television and pop culture at Syracuse University, about Christmas specials, holiday specials on TV, and the movies that you like to watch year after year. Do you have a favorite? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
All right, who votes for Rudolph as the best TV special for the Christmas season? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org as we are talking about the best Christmas movies and TV specials with Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Now, Robert, am I remembering correctly? I remember the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a year or two ago was doing the very best TV special, and it seemed to me you were voting for Rudolph at the time. Is that one of your favorites?
It's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is still my very, 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 very favorite. I have to watch it every year. I try to watch it when it's actually on, though I'm not sure why that is. But, I'm not sure that's really a professional opinion. So much of what we love about this stuff, it's kind of like what we love best about Saturday morning cartoons. It's really not so much about art. It's really not so much about objective quality. It's really all about nostalgia. I was born in 1959. Rudolph debuts in 1964. So I'm like 5 years yeah. old when that starts, which is right at the time that something like that really appeals to you. And I don't think I missed a single viewing of that thing, and this is long before the age of video cassette recorders, until I was probably in graduate school. I managed to watch every single year without interruption. So, yes, that's still my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's not just nostalgia. There is something about that process of animating with stop action with things that look like what would come out of your dream toy box that still looks, it's primitive today, but it's so incredibly charming.
Yeah, it is. And that story was sweet, too. They won't, you know, let him join in any reindeer games until he saved the day on Christmas.
Yeah, there
Eve.
Are a lot of very nice messages in it, including, I mean, one of the most modern characters now that I don't think we ever appreciate is Herbie the Elf, who wants to be a dentist. And, of course, we can use his being ostracized as coded language for anything at any time that would make someone feel ostracized and alone and all the rest of it. This is really about two people who don't fit in and end up triumphing. That is an extraordinarily modern story.
Yeah. Rudolph will be on CBS tomorrow night. Yeah, so you can check it out then.
You know, there have been years when they played Rudolph before Thanksgiving. That always really bothered me.
Oh, yeah, and then maybe the backlash made them wait until after Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah, and then they usually repeat it a couple of times now that primetime does that. So you usually get a couple of chances on all of these shows.
Let's go to Boyd in Wautoma next. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Joy. One film that I think has garnered a following, and it's not new, but I don't know if everyone would consider it a Christmas film, is The Nightmare Before Christmas. A few years ago, I finally showed it to my nephews and niece, and they really liked it. My niece in particular, I mean, she's a big fan of Jack Pumpkinhead. I know in some ways, I don't know if you could say it has more of a cult following, but I just know it was very popular with people, and this is, you know, going back to my generation, that were really into the whole goth subculture. They loved the film, but they liked a lot of what Tim Burton did.
Howard?
Yes, A Nightmare Before Christmas. This is a complex entry in the Christmas movie. First of all, you're right. It is pretty old, 1993, if I'm not mistaken. And here's one of the issues that I think it hasn't managed to sort of get into that same category with, you know, It's a Wonderful Life and Home Alone and all that kind of thing. And that is, there's this complexity in that it's both a Halloween movie and a Christmas movie. Jack Skellington is, of course, the head of Halloween, and he likes the fact that Christmas is a bigger holiday, and they merge the two. And my daughter growing up, we always had this argument as to, do we watch A Nightmare Before Christmas in October, or do we watch A Nightmare Before Christmas over Christmas break? That question was never satisfactorily answered in our house. You are right about the fact that it's the only place we really get that kind of Tim Burton Hot Topic treatment of not just Halloween, but of Christmas itself. It kind of allows the darker imagery of Halloween to infiltrate Christmas in some fascinating ways. It really is a wonderful film. I see new things in it every time I watch it.
Thank you, Boyd. Let's go next to Paul in Oshkosh. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. I just wanted to mention A Christmas Story.
And you, is that one of your favorites?
It is. I'm 41. I saw that in the theater as a little kid, and I still watch it every year, every time I see it on TV.
Mm-hmm. That's a newer classic, isn't it, Robert?
It is, but I think I would go so far as to say it may now be at the top of the heap. I mean, for many, many, many years, It's a Wonderful Life was always kind of sitting there as, when we talk about movies,
yes,
not TV, It's a Wonderful Life was always considered kind of the default best Christmas movie ever made. And then A Christmas Story comes out in 1983, and people watch it, in this case, in the caller's case, at the theater, and then they start seeing it on TV, and it plays a lot on TV. That's how It's a Wonderful Life became popular. And I would say probably about 5 or even 10 years ago, A Christmas Story may have inched its way above It's a Wonderful Life as the classic at the top of the pyramid. It helps that it's in color, but also, even though it was made in 1983, it's set back in the late 40s, I think, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's got all the nostalgia of ye old Christmas, all those incredible department store scenes, which are just breathtaking. So I think probably if you had to give the gold medal to a Christmas movie, I think probably it would go to A Christmas Story.
Yeah. And here I am calling it a newer classic, 1983.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't get my gold medal, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Let's go to David in Watertown next. Hi, David.
Good morning. Thank you for another great show. Hey, just a question. It seems with some of these Christmas shows that, and I think about The Grinch or especially Charlie Brown Christmas, I wonder about the audience. To me, it always seemed like they're sort of built to look like kids' shows. But the audience seems to be a very decidedly adult one. he mentioned some of the adult themes in Charlie Brown. The music, I think, without the Vince Guaraldi score, I don't know if it's the same show.
Are we expect, or did the makers of these specials expect adults to love them too?
Well, the makers of these specials were working in the 1960s when you were aiming for everybody. You were just looking for the biggest audience you could possibly get. So they wanted everybody to enjoy them. But I think they were designed with the idea that these were specials for kids, and then they'd get turned on, and a ratings box was a ratings box. It was on, and you got the ratings. But a perfect evidence for what the caller said is true, that now these things tend to be much more adult-oriented. You can find all of these tie-in things in catalogs, and there's all of these Christmas villages of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and these porcelain figures of a Charlie Brown Christmas and all of this fancy stuff, and I swear over half of it is breakable and dangerous, something you would never give to a kid because they'd break it and then they'd cut themselves on it. So there's a sense that the nostalgia industry that seems to have surrounded these things in the various things you can order with them are clearly aimed at adults, because most of them are inappropriate for anyone under the age of about 12. By the way, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is currently on commercials in two different products, some long-distance line and Denny's.
We are talking with Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture, director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse University, talking about the best holiday TV specials and the best Christmas movies, and wondering if you have some favorites that you'd like to share. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Robert in De Pere is with us now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning. I am a huge fan of It's a Wonderful Life, and I've noticed that they don't show it as nearly as much as they used to. And I don't know why that is or if somebody's put the rights to it. But what I do see, for example, like on cable networks, like the Hallmark Channel and the Lifetime Channel, for example, you see them trying to recapture the classic Christmas movie by these old television sitcom actors and what have you, and they take every twist on our classic Christmas stories and tales and try to modernize them. I just wanted to get your guys' viewpoint on that, and what do you think, and why are they trying to do that, and why can't we just stay with the classic staples that we all love and enjoy? Thank you.
Well, thanks, Robert, but you know what, Robert Thompson, I'm not sure I understand that we're, now that they're trying to remake classics.
Oh,
like
yeah. Okay.
It's a Wonderful Life?
He makes all kinds of really fascinating points. Mm-hmm. First of all, the It's a Wonderful Life thing, and of course, it's a classic. It's a Wonderful Life played in theaters, and it did okay. It was no huge hit, but it was by no means penetrated the culture. It was in the 70s when It's a Wonderful Life, by some weird copyright not being renewed or something, went into what everybody perceived was the public domain, and every station played It's a Wonderful Life all through December because it was cheap programming. So when they didn't have a network feed, or if they were an independent station, they'd throw it on during the weekends, and they'd play it a lot. And that's when It's a Wonderful Life became the classic that it's in. That's when it became penetrated the culture. And then, so you saw it all the time. You couldn't help but see it. Then, and I'm not sure exactly how this happened, but somehow NBC managed to get exclusive rights. I don't know if they reclaimed copyright. I'm not an patent attorney or a copyright attorney, but NBC got them, and therefore they only played on NBC. NBC made it a special night, and they'd play It's a Wonderful Life, so you weren't seeing it constantly in reruns like you were before. And I would say that might have something to do with the fact that that movie begins to be receding a little bit, but of course anybody can see it now online or on DVD or anything. The second issue is a fascinating one. There are, and if you turn on the Hallmark Channel or a number of other places during December, you will find an absolute deluge of these sentimental, family-oriented, new, made-for-TV movies that try to recapture the It's a Wonderful Life feeling, or the Christmas feeling in general. There are a whole bunch of them, but they're now on these sort of cable channels that they get relatively small audiences, and I have a sneaking suspicion, even though some of these are good, most of them aren't, but I'm not sure that any of them are ever going to reach the status of these other classics because people just aren't seeing them.
Yeah, let's take a listen to what has to be one of the favorite scenes from It's a Wonderful Life.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right. Attaboy, Clarence.
Yeah, attaboy, Jimmy Stewart.
You let me start weeping without having to watch an hour and 45 minutes before doing it.
That's right. You mentioned, though, that you think that It's a Wonderful Life has been toppled at the top of the best Christmas movie pile by A Christmas Story, but you said A Christmas Story does not get your gold medal. What gets your gold medal?
Well, it's a brand new, not brand new, it was 2013, but last year or the year before, I forget when I first saw it, I was flipping around on Showtime, and they were playing a movie called Black Nativity, based very loosely on the Langston Hughes play, and inspired by the play, or the play, we should say. And it has, and listen to this cast, Forrest Whitaker, Angela Bassett, Jennifer Hudson, Mary J. Blige. And it's such a beautiful movie, and it's got all the things you expect from A Christmas Story. It's schmaltzy, it's sappy, it's tear-jerking, there's redemption, and it's really, really a beautiful movie. Pretty short, too. I think it's maybe 90 minutes long, a little longer than that. So anybody who's never seen 2013's Black Nativity, I suggest you turn off your radios right now and go find it.
Not right now. In 20 minutes you can do that. But damn,
okay,
I will look for that. Renee in Madison is with us now. Hi, Renee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I saw a show once when I was a little girl on TV, and it stuck with me. The black and white movie based on a short story by Truman Capote. And I looked it up about 5 years ago on YouTube, and it's called A Christmas Memory. And
yeah,
he wrote it about himself growing up. And I think it's interesting now because the whole thing with Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird, wasn't he the one that grew up with Harper Lee? So you can see a little bit of his childhood, perhaps, through this short story. And it's got a weird mood, I think. You know, you were talking about how it appeals to adults. I think there's a lot of adult themes, but still it's through the child's point of view. And then at the end, you can hear Truman Capote in a voiceover, and that adds a certain amount of, I don't know, reality to it.
Another one I haven't heard of, so that was A Christmas
Memory. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Truman Capote wrote short stories, A Christmas Memory and A Thanksgiving Memory. He did one for each of those holidays, and they did a film adaptation of A Christmas Memory. I'm not sure they did whether they did or not for the Thanksgiving one. And it is real. It's a very, very nice film adaptation, and it's a really, really beautiful story. It's a relationship between, I guess, Truman and another older character. And again, 20 minutes from now, put that on your queue.
We are talking with our guest, a popular culture expert, Robert Thompson, about Christmas specials that have withstood the test of time, and Christmas movies as well. What are some of the classics that you appreciate, that you like to watch year after year? Or what are some of the classics in the making? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
We are talking about Christmas TV specials and holiday movies. Is there a program that you absolutely must watch each year? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Tis the season for these holiday specials. And in fact, tonight is going to be the 50th anniversary of A Charlie Brown Christmas. It's 50 years old this year. Do you believe it? We have a listener who emails, there is none better than the animated version of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. And, of course, having it as a ringtone is even better. People always stare and get a smile on their face when they hear, "You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch." That's hilarious. That the lyrics to that song are just phenomenal. I mean, especially for little kids, you know, "You're a greasy banana peel" and all this.
Oh yeah, kids love that kind of stuff. And television back in 1966 generally didn't serve it up to them, and that must have been really delicious to a young kid. Well, it was to me.
Yep.
Back then. And How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the animated version, I have to say, and this isn't often true, but I think that television special exceeds in quality the original book. It's got other stuff. It does other things. I think it's better than the original book by Dr. Seuss. And certainly it's better than the long extended version they did on the movie version with Jim Carrey as the Grinch, which was some brilliant casting. But that little half-hour show, take out the commercials, about 25 minutes, is one of the great classics. I'd put it in my top three with Rudolph and Charlie Brown of great Christmas classics. And, of course, it's a retelling of A Christmas Carol, and about 50% of all Christmas movies are a retelling of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it was, we've got the same favorites for sure. And I didn't, though, realize until you told me that was, did you say 1966 was when that first came out?
Yeah, year after Charlie Brown.
Yeah, that's true.
Charlie Brown and Grinch, one right after the other. Those were incredible years. And by the way, movies had, 20 years before that, had a similar period. Check this out. Christmas in Connecticut, 1945. Great Christmas music movie. It's a Wonderful Life, 1946. 1947, both Miracle on 34th Street and A Bishop's Wife.
Wow.
That's four incredible classic movies from 45 to 47, just like we got four incredible TV things from 64 to 69.
Well, here's another movie from Nick in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good morning, Joy. How are you doing?
Pretty good. You have a comedy that you want to mention.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's more of a modern cult classic now, but National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Chase film. Yeah, you know that one. The reason I love that one is because I think, well, I'm from a very large Catholic family. I'm both both sides. And it's, I think that movie really speaks to kind of the joy yet, oh my God, of having a large family come over. And I think just the comedic situations that, you know, the main characters find themselves in that film speak even today. I mean, it's an 80s film, but I think it still talks even today about what you experience in a big family, and it's very relatable.
Yeah. Is that the one where I shouldn't even bring this up because it was kind of a scene where the kitty gets zapped by the Christmas tree lights?
Yep. I think everybody gets zapped by Christmas tree lights in that movie. It's 1989. It's also got a great the theme song or whatever. I think it's probably at the end credits. I'm so glad it's Christmas Vacation, a really catchy tune. I'm surprised it hasn't caught on more. Yeah, that's 1989, and that show manages to bridge the... It's both much hipper, and it's much, it really is, you know, much more kind of edgy, but it's before we got into these movies that took, like Bad Santa, a great movie, but one you would never watch with the kids. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation was kind of a, you know, slightly controversial at the time. Now it seems so charmingly nostalgic.
Our next caller is Glenn in Stoughton. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. I want to talk about Arthur Christmas from 2011.
I don't remember that one.
It's an animated movie by the people that do the Wallace and Gromit shorts and feature films. And most people look at me with a blank stare when I talk about this movie, but it's really terrific. And it's got Pixar-level animation and a wonderful story, and more people need to see this movie.
It sounds like you're familiar with it, Robert.
This is not Arthur the Aardvark.
No, this is it's called Arthur Christmas. It's from Aardman Animation.
All right.
And I know Hugh Laurie from TV's House was one of the voice talents in it.
All right.
Okay, it's on my list to immediately go and see. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the animation, Toy Story turns 20 this year, and well, that may not be a Christmas special. ABC is going to run a one-hour tribute to Pixar on December 10th, which, according to an article, revolutionized computer-generated animation. So how would you say it did that?
Well, it made it. I mean, when Pixar started, computer generated animation was a relatively new technology, and then they just started churning out some unbelievably good movies. I mean, Toy Story. What did you say? It's 20th anniversary. It seems like it's been around forever.
Yeah, 20.
Those were really really important movies, and even though they were CGI, which at first seemed like it was kind of soulless and everything, by the time we get to Toy Story 3, that's a very emotional movie, as are a lot of Pixar films.
We are talking about holiday specials and best Christmas movies and welcoming your nominations and welcoming your questions, your memories, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
He'll be here to take pictures with all the children.
Yeah.
Just keep your receipts. 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
Santa's coming to town.
Yes.
Elf is so excited that Santa's coming to town. So, yeah, Elf
of all the movies, of Christmas movies of the 21st century, and that one was 2003, I think Elf has got the best chance of being one we're still watching a century from now.
I believe it. I mean, it seems like it is a classic in the making, if not already on its way, huh?
Yeah, I think so. It's already got the patina of one of those, and it's fairly family-friendly. Kids like it because he burps for 35 seconds. It's got everything.
Are there any other classics in the making that come to mind?
Well, Well, I mean, there's a lot that we, I mean, and because we can see all this kind of stuff, but I would tend to bring up one, and I'm sure you're going to, callers will complain about this, but Schwarzenegger was in a movie in 1996 called Jingle All the Way. It's generally panned by critics, but I think that captured the frenzy of looking for a toy and everything in ways that, I don't know, I think it should get more credit for. And we haven't mentioned Scrooged. That goes back to 1988, Bill Murray's retelling of A Christmas Carol, he as a network executive. That has got many, many absolutely brilliant moments in it. And we hear about that less lately, so I guess it's not a classic in the making.
Well, you know, Bill Martins, my producer and director for this hour, was so thrilled to hear you bring up Jingle All the Way because it contains one of, I think, Bill's favorite scenes, and he pulled it for us. Let's take a listen.
Howard, excuse me, but your wife's cookies are out of this world.
What a... Who told you you can eat my cookies?
I'm just helping Liz out a little in the kitchen. She's making up a storm here.
Ted, I need to speak to my wife. So could you get her on the phone, please?
I think she's in the shower, Howard. Do you want me to go check?
No! I mean, no, that's fine. On your way out, just tell her we'll be a few minutes late. But you shouldn't worry.
Oh, she won't worry. I mean, I'm here and... Oh, these cookies! I gotta get the recipe from Liz.
Put that cookie down! Now!
Well, someone should elect that guy governor.
Was there something
wrong
with that cookie?
By the way, Bill Martins is now my new BFF because he likes that movie.
Yeah, see there? Now you guys have something in common. He loves that movie. But what was with the cookie? Did Arnold just not want him eating the cookie, or was there something?
You know, I have to admit, it's been so long. I love that movie. I've seen it 3 or 4 times, but and when I heard that, it's hysterical all over again. But I forget what the exact context is. But Arnold Schwarzenegger in a Christmas movie saying, "Leave my cookies alone." You don't need context.
Apparently, Bill said that Arnold just didn't want his neighbor eating the cookies. So there we go.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Frank in Wausau is with us now. Hi, Frank.
Hi, I'll be brief. My all-time favorite movie was A Mall and the Night Visitors, which was a children's opera, actually an opera that by Giancarlo Minotti, an Italian playwright. It was on NBC across the country starting, I think, in 1955. And it's a story of a little poor shepherd boy who gets visited by the three kings with their gifts, and he says, I don't have a gift to give them. I can only give the Christ child my cane. And immediately a miracle happens and he's able to walk. And it was the most touching story. I remember I'm 65 years old and I've watched it every Christmas while I was on TV. And I still remember it to this day. Anyways,
and that's opera.
My favorite.
It's an opera, though, is what you said.
It's an opera, and it was on NBC nationally, 1955 to maybe about 1960.
Wow, A Mall and the Night Visitors, Robert Thompson.
Yes, this was a very important part of TV history. You're right; it was an opera, and it wasn't an adaptation of an opera for television. NBC commissioned this opera.
Wow.
This was an opera written for television. And this was, by the way, back when NBC had a NBC Symphony Orchestra, when networks actually had their own orchestras. It debuted on what they called NBC Opera Theater, if you can believe there was such a thing, on Christmas Eve of 1951. Then I think it also went on to Hallmark Hall of Fame, which goes back that far. And the other important thing about Amal and the Night Visitors, which is, I agree, a beautiful and touching story and beautiful music, it also became, if I'm not mistaken, NBC's first color broadcast of all time. They introduced color way back in 54. I may be off a year or two. And they broadcast Amal and the Night Visitors in color in 1954. Only problem was nobody had a color TV.
Yeah. Lara's emails, and he says, you may have already touched on this, but we did not. What are your guest thoughts on the old specials with Andy Williams or Perry Como?
Oh, yeah.
My dad loved those, and we used to watch them all the time, but they don't really do those types of things anymore.
And, you know, they haven't gone away completely. Back in the early 2000s, there was an incredible day on Fox where NSYNC and Britney Spears had back-to-back Christmas specials. But they weren't quite the same. And she does mention the two kings of this, Perry Como and Andy Williams. And Dolly Parton got into this business. Anne Murray did them. John Denver did them. And they were basically old-school variety shows. They'd usually go to their hometown, or Andy Williams would go to the Holy Land, or he'd go to wherever. And it was an excuse to sing a bunch of Christmas carols, normally get family around them. And it's really hard to get young people to watch these. Occasionally I'll throw one of these in for my students, and all they can do is laugh at them, whereas we really thought they were, a nice way to, another way to package a bunch of Christmas songs. One of the most famous was one Judy Garland did. And she had she was surrounded by family and her kids, and Judy Garland was kind of in her downward spiral at that point, and there's some really uncomfortable moments in it.
Yeah. Angela in Stoughton has some memories of some classics. Hi, Angela.
Hi. Speaking of Judy Garland, she's not in these, but I love the old big dance numbers like Holiday Inn, White Christmas. Easter time, I always have to watch Easter Parade with Judy Garland. So.
Yeah,
love the big dance numbers.
Sure, I was waiting for White Christmas to come, or Holiday Inn.
Yeah, White Christmas is 1954, which is actually I wouldn't call it a spinoff. Holiday Inn's much earlier. That's like 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that it's early. Isn't Holiday Inn the one that has a blackface scene in it?
Oh, I don't remember.
I may be wrong about that, but anyway, that's 42. And then, of course, the one of the breakout songs from Holiday Inn was White Christmas, right. And then that gets the full treatment in 54. And that's still a classic. Again, that late 40s, early 50s, just one title after another that we're still watching today.
Cindy in De Pere. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. One of my favorites is one that my daughter and I watched a couple years ago together. It's called Mixed Nuts with Steve Martin, Rita Wilson. It has a really huge cast. It is so funny. We just were tired of laughing.
That's good. Mixed Nuts. I don't even know that. But
I have not seen that since it came out. That's another one I'm going to put on my list to go rewatch.
Yeah, and we have less than 30 seconds to go. Was there a favorite that we haven't talked about?
Oh, there's a lot of favorites we haven't talked about, but it's so easy now to get these lists and knock yourself out and try not to lose your job from watching too many TV shows.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robert Thompson, professor of television and pop culture at Syracuse University. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.